Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.11, where we wonder who Michigan's backup quarterback is for three quarters, and then find out,
and then one snap later, it's somebody else.
All right, folks, 42-7 over Rutgers in the most disappointing 35-point blowout in Michigan history.
So that's why I didn't need to scout Rutgers.
Are we really doing this?
We're doing what?
A podcast on Rutgers?
Yes. This is what we do every week.
Was I supposed to take notes for this?
No.
I figure, like, geez, I just show up and maybe we'll have a meeting and then go home.
Rutgers fans, like, need to know what happened because, like, I don't think any of them were at the game or watching the game.
Do we have Rutgers listeners and Rutgers readers?
I think there are probably more Rutgers readers for FIFA film than there were Michigan fans who read that.
This is a noble institution on the banks of the mighty Piscataway.
Is that a river?
I don't know.
I think that's the name of the town.
It's a river now, just like Rob Ash is now the coach.
Oh yeah.
Of the fighting cable subscribers.
Good old Rob.
I don't even think he tries.
My name is Rob.
Do you think?
No, I think he just
lives and stuff happens.
You know, I do that all the time. I forget people's names that I've known for years.
Yes.
Like, what's your friend's name?
Except Melissa.
Medusa?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Medusa?
I don't know. It's something like that.
She has a lot of snakes.
Rob.
Rob. I'm going to call her Rob.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's one thing that Jim Harbaugh and I have in common. Another thing we have in common is that we probably thought that the fan base freak out at 7-7 was a little...
Was there a fan base freak out?
I mean,
I was on Twitter and I was on our live blog, and neither one of them was freaking out at all.
Well, I mean, I got a couple ads like, this isn't going to be good enough to beat Ohio State. And I'm like, okay.
But those people are probably trolls. I don't think that's a freak out. There's a difference between people who are like, let's see if I can get under the guy who likes to get emotional skin and somebody who's kind of like...
Oh, is that what I am now?
During games.
No, I just mute people and move on.
Do you?
Most of the time.
Okay. Well, it's good.
You have no idea how many, like, quote tweets I pass up where I'm like, nah.
That's probably very true.
So
you got two quote tweets during a Rutgers game.
I didn't quote tweet anybody.
Okay.
No, I'm saying
you got two guys, two Michigan fans in the world were mad yesterday.
A lot for a Rutgers game.
That's a lot.
For a game against Rutgers, when people are like, ooh, I'm fusty, like, all right, fine, buddy.
Fusty? Yeah. All right, we're going deep in the thesaurus today.
Well, you know, that's how we do. We would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the residents in Ann Arbor downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus.
Fortunately, we did not lose our conference room this week.
Whoa, that would be bad. So 42-7. Michigan puts the quarterback run game away and kind of reverts to early season Michigan running, which is a little bit clunky because when your quarterback is no threat to run out of the gun, you just can't really put together a good ground game because your box is often a little light and other people can insert extra men into your... are we doing phrasing? No.
Good. It's Rutgers week.
So people will insert extra men into your box, and then you will get tackled for not many yards. And that kind of felt like what was happening for large portions of this game. So Michigan would pick up 2 yards, and they'd pick up 3 yards, and they'd be in 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 7 or 3rd and 8. And then Shea Patterson would be the apotheosis version of himself.
And convert a 3rd and long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, My that living room
about
was
right. I mean, do you remember the UNLV game from like 2015 where Michigan just kept
No.
Well, they ended up winning like 28-0, but they ran their yards per carry were super low because they just kept running into 8 and 9 man boxes.
Right.
And everyone's like, "Oh, this run game and stuff." And it's like we got on the podcast the next day and you're like, "Well, where did you expect to get yards? Like you just have a massive bodies that are there." But Michigan wasn't going to pull out anything. They weren't going to try to fool them. They were just going to get enough yards to win the game and move on.
I think
that's
living room,
what this felt like.
Like my living room had one, you know, the keep is open, guy. And he managed to keep it down like the first two times. And the third time he actually like voiced his thought. And everyone in the room said, you know, shut up, Ben.
Ben. Yeah, I'm just kind of, I mean, I'll just say that I'm glad he didn't pull.
Sure.
I'm glad he didn't run.
Ben.
I'm glad we're 1 week closer to having our starting quarterback healthy against Ohio State.
Which, when is the last time that happened?
14? I don't know.
11. 2011 is the last time we had a, yes.
Wasn't Gardner played in 14?
Okay, but Gardner broke his foot like
in 13.
Oh, was that in 13?
Yeah, that was a home game when he set all those records.
Gardner had no ribs left in 2014. I'm not counting that as a healthy quarterback.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay. All right, so you're 11.
Devin Gardner's soul had been battered from his body.
He was the most injured quarterback. He was just, you know, still physically standing.
A broken man.
And he didn't even play in the next game. He didn't play in the bowl game.
However, we are an Indiana start away from getting back to that.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Especially nice. With this quarterback.
It would be nice. So Patterson is the Pro Football Focus quarterback of the week nationally with a 92.4 rating. And all Dave right. thinks that's stupid.
I don't think it's...
You're the facial expression you are giving me on this very visual podcast.
Maybe, I mean, he made nice throws, and we'll talk about it a little bit. But I'm not down on him. I'm just, you know, player of the week is kind of...
Player of the week, baby.
Pretty... All right. Well, hey.
Player of the week. He made a bunch of very, very, very DO throws.
Yeah.
So, like, the touchdown to Oliver Martin where he's able to, like, juke around a couple of guys after 17 seconds in the pocket.
He set up a campfire.
Literally 6 seconds.
That was a terrible play call.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's only two guys in the route.
There's two guys in the route, and you're on the 16. Like, what is your...
I think that Michigan throughout this whole game was kind of playing Madden. On the with a 99 team, like they're just you know let's try this now for a little bit and practice our pocket presence.
I just don't agree with the two man route from in the red zone. Like there's just not enough upside.
I don't agree with two man routes in general.
Yeah, why are you going max like, protect?
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. So anyway, like he's able to.
But he threw that. It was a good throw.
Yeah, it hit him in the hands on the sideline in a very difficult situation. The throw to Peoples-Jones where he's flushed out of the pocket.
Yes.
And he makes two separate reads before going. There's two throws to Peoples-Jones that happen. One of these is like he's flushed out of the pocket and he makes two separate reads before going to Peoples-Jones for a conversion. The second one is kind of that fade type thing where he's rolling against his body on purpose.
The left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And. So those are good throws.
Yep.
And his downfield stuff, he had a little bit more of a wobble than he usually does. But, you know, after the game in the press conference, we're talking about the wind and how it was just kind of a difficult situation. And those are the throws where it would show up.
Sure.
He also put a bomb on Oliver Martin's hands down like in the end zone.
It was more of his face mask.
Yeah, I thought the catch was slightly more difficult than you did when we were talking about this, but...
Well, if it goes off your face mask, it's going to be a 3.
All right.
For one, it just looks stupid. That's like... Like, it looks embarrassing, so I got to make it a 3.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I can see your point.
No, I mean, well, he's fading back, and then the ball is thrown even further back behind him, and he couldn't get his hands up to his mouth.
And it kind of felt like maybe that was one that got a little pushed by the wind,
right.
So it was a different spot than he expected. But, I mean, Patterson had that fade to Collins. Nico Collins.
Now, that one was, yeah, that was legit.
You'll approve that
that's,
one.
That's, I mean, that's like Stanford to their throwing to their trees stuff, where they just
post. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Right, but they've been doing this for however long, and you just get a 6'5 guy, and you literally post him up for a rebound, and you throw it into the spot where he has the side advantage, and there's literally nothing you can do.
And that was from the 10. So, like.
Okay.
I'm more accepting of the red zone fade from the 10
than from like the three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it really gets like, what are you doing? Because you have a lot more room for one, and for two, your upside's bigger, right? Like you can probably pound it in from the three. The 10's a lot more of a dodgy proposition.
Right. Yeah. You don't, and there's not a lot of other routes you're going to run from like the three.
But so they had the punt like at the end of the first half. They had the fourth down conversion that was not, for reasons we'll get into. But other than that, they're just going down the field and scoring touchdowns on every drive. So it's like, fine. You know, I wish this was a little bit more explosive, but, you know, whatever.
So, the scout on Rutgers was that their pass defense, so their secondary is a lot better than their front. Okay. So I thought you could run into them all game. And they kind of, I mean, they did not put a lot of effort into the running game. They ran power pretty well. Like, anytime they pulled something out, down G worked every time they ran it. Like, I think Michigan was going into this game trying
to practice still
their
like
passing game.
Third and like 3.9 yards an attempt, I think, ish, before the big one from Evan. So even though they're kind of putting the fancy stuff back in the barn, you kind of want them to do a little bit better. This is a team that gave up 5.1 yards a rush to Buffalo. So
Buffalo's got some dudes.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they're the dutiest of MAC teams.
I was fine with it. Like, there are so many, like, third and ones and fourth and ones that they're running into anyway. And if you're putting big chunks of your running game back in the shed and just running very base stuff, like, I did not care. There was no point where I thought that Michigan was going to have trouble running against Rutgers if they wanted to.
Well, and then one thing that did kind of leap out is that there were a couple of really bad cuts.
Yeah, you saw that.
One of them, of course, was the fourth down that got stuffed. Now, slightly in Higdon's defense, Runyon was getting pushed back into the lane. And, okay, that could spook you. But this lane's still there. And if he goes off the front side, that's probably a touchdown because they had destroyed a defensive tackle and there's nobody back there.
And you're Caron Higdon. Like, you fall forward and get a yard. That's your game. And that's what they needed, right?
Right.
And so if a guy kind of hits you, it's not like you're getting stoned.
Right. Like, if he hits you from the side, your balance is probably going to get you through that.
Right.
Yeah. So I was really, really disappointing. And then you have the Mason.
Yeah, that was...
About where he goes backwards.
Like, he's like, I think I can get the corner. Yes.
It was like Freaky Friday thing where he switched with Chris Evans mid-play. Like, oh.
Who was the bounce guy? Michael Shaw.
Mike Shaw. Yeah. Mike Shaw is randomly haunting Michigan running backs.
Well, and he's in there because Higdon just bounced the wrong way a couple times. So like, okay, let's put in our bra fullback just to go forward, and then he does that. Like,
well, one interesting thing I thought is that immediately after the Higdon fourth down run, True Wilson comes in the game, and this seems to me a signal that they were not very happy with that decision.
With a couple of the cuts?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And then Wilson, like, he feels like a really, really natural runner in a way that Higdon sometimes doesn't.
Okay.
Like, I have these complaints about Higdon's vision that pop up pretty frequently.
Hmm. And still?
Still, I mean, after this game, certainly.
Okay. But I mean, like, this year has happened?
He's been better, but it's always like this is a flaw in his game.
Okay.
And I feel that True Wilson always does the thing that it seems the blocking tells him to. Hmm. So if there's a guy who's being kicked out, he's going to cut inside that guy and then maybe pop back out after going inside that block. He slaloms through the blocks.
Okay.
He doesn't miss gates. And I feel like Higdon misses gates.
I like watching True because it's like the counterfactual that we've always wondered when we're playing like an Air Force of what would happen if we got one of those running backs who are just like the guys who always cut off the right thing, always know what... He literally is an Air Force running back.
Right. Well, he's going to go there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy who, if he's the starting running back next year, I'm fine with it. Like, I might want Charbonnet to come through like later in the year, but he's a good pass protector.
He
makes the most of his blocks. Like, he's not a thunder athlete, but, you know, he's fine.
And you can hear the fans, the Michigan fans at Rutgers yelling his name.
That's actually the one downside.
It's his name.
I'm not a big fan of the True from the crowd.
But you like McDoom.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, okay, we did the McDoom thing. Now let's move on.
Yeah, that's not how that works. People just want to look for something to yell.
Yeah, who's the first athlete that you remember that being with? Because mine's Lou Whitaker.
That's a while ago.
Mine is Eddie McDoom.
Of course it is. That was a new experience for you when that happened?
I mean, I've heard of it.
You're like, oh, we're yelling a name, and it sounds like a threatening kind of.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Okay.
It's like the only, it's fan sarcasm that's functional because it's so easy.
It's fan participation.
It's not sarcasm. If it was sarcasm, it would be better. So that's what I think.
They're not saying true. They're saying movers.
I don't understand what you're saying at all.
The Peyton Manning commercials.
Oh my God.
From years ago when he went to.
You know, like Peyton Manning commercial
deep
cuts?
Yeah, you know why? Because I watch sports, Brian.
You haven't learned to watch sports without commercials yet?
This was like 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
You kind of didn't have those same opportunities.
The last Peyton Manning one I remember was his
brother. They just invented commercials and nobody knew what to do with them. Anyway, Michigan's receiving core.
Here we go.
Kind of rounding into its own. So Peoples Jones, I don't think, has a routine drop this year. And that's getting up there in sample size.
Yeah.
And
it's taken a while because we're not really throwing the ball.
Right. But he's a guy who he just feels like a really natural receiver. He comes in as, you know, the super athlete.
Right.
And you're always a little bit, you know, wonder if like the guy has Stoneham disease or something. Or he's just not a receiver, but he's a big, fast, football-shaped athlete.
Okay.
That is emphatically not the case with DJ. Like, everything he does is very natural.
And I wonder, I guess we probably would have semi-found that out last year had someone been able to get him the ball.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a situation where this is kind of his freshman year because it's his first year with a functional passing offense.
Yeah.
And everything he's done, like, he picked up slants. He's able to make those catches over the middle. He's got good body control on that fade.
He's made good crackback blocks.
Yeah, he's maybe their best blocker of the receivers out there right now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assertion. So, like, there was that thread on the board, like, are we disappointed in Donovan Peoples-Jones as a five-star? And so, whoever that guy was.
Was that preseason or was it like the first couple games or something?
No, after the first couple games. Whoever that guy was, could you please do the same thing two games into next year about Daxton Hill?
Or
we make a request.
Number of others.
Or, yes, maybe a number of other players as well.
I think it would be really interesting to see this group of pass catchers. And I say pass catchers because I also include guys like John Tree and maybe even McCune. But if you put them in sort of like an air raid where what you wanted to do was throw the ball. So now you had to use all these different guys and you got 50 attempts a game and that's just what you did. Because we do prep and look at the box scores and I look at, oh, you know, he had another three catches and then like four catches and you're getting up. Maybe he's going to hit 30 and you're just like, wow, that's not a great year. But when you have to think about it in context and realize Michigan's wanted to run the ball all year, and that's for aside from maybe like one to two games, that's basically what they've done. So
we haven't really
gotten to see like a fully weaponized version of having like a wide receiver arsenal.
Right. And they wanted to get Patterson healthy to the game.
Right.
Like that's been such a focus. And so they don't pull out any of the quarterback run stuff until this gauntlet, really.
Right.
And they do it through the gauntlet, and as soon as the gauntlet's done, it's off. So, like, so much of their focus is not getting this guy hit.
Yep.
And I'd be that paranoid, too, if I was a Michigan coach.
And so in that way, like, you see, like, the McCaffrey injury last week, and you're like, oh, all it takes is, like, one shot, and, like, why are we even going to take this chance?
Exactly. So, I mean, I agree with you that I would like to see what this looks like. Especially with Black back, because now you can put Peoples Jones in the slot.
And you add Gentry. So, I mean, that's four guys that are just monsters.
And Chris Evans, too.
And then you have Evans motioning him out of the backfield. That should be what they do next year.
They did some nice things this game, at least, with Evans in the five wide. Like, they threw the screen to him, and he's the guy I want getting those screens, not, you know, Collins. And then they also threw, like, remember, there was a game earlier in the season where, like, people were just playing way off of Evans, and, like, we were screaming, throw it to Evans, and, like, they did. They threw it to Evans when the guy was playing way off of him, and he went and got his 9 yards.
Yeah, they threw the flash screen, they threw another one, and, like, that's how he's best utilized.
Yeah, and that, he's not going to be a great run blocker, or a great pass blocker, so getting him out there takes away one of the defenders, and...
Did you guys see Grant Perry?
Not much. I mean, with Black back, you're putting Peoples-Jones in the slot a lot.
Or Oliver Martin.
Martin actually had a game. Like,
yeah.
He was out there.
He was like, I think the first thing that I wrote down as I was sitting here waiting to take notes for this, I'm just like, I got to find something to talk about. And Oliver Martin, like, he got a end run? Or a, like a
end around?
End around, yeah. And then had what, three catches, I think?
Or as play-by-play announcers like to call it, the triple reverse.
Is that what they called it?
No.
Oh, but I was hoping.
They often call it a reverse.
Yeah, when it's just one direction.
They add like two directions to any receiver handoff.
And then there was a reverse, I think, in the Ohio State game that Michigan State ran that got called a double reverse.
Oh, my gosh. It was like a flip. They end up losing, like, anyway.
Yeah.
Not
we'll talk about that abomination with Jamie.
Yeah. So, no, but Martin looks like the slot heir apparent.
I mean, unless DPJ is the slot heir apparent.
I guess.
I mean, he's going to get reps there because the ability to match him up against the safety is very enticing.
And I think that we thought that you would have DPJ and Black as the top two receivers. And then now, like, the fact that Black's been hurt and Collins had to come in, Collins has played well.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have drops, and he maybe doesn't have the arsenal of routes that maybe we've seen from DPJ. I mean, maybe he does. We just haven't seen it.
I mean, he gets open deep. Like.
Right, but he beats you deep, and they've thrown some hitches. They've thrown a couple of different things at him.
And
so now you have
fade online.
Three guys that, like, you have a lot of things you can do with.
Is DPJ a star on the diagram now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's clear, especially with the punt returns that kind of give you the element of his
look
run after the
on
catch
board. Yeah.
Hey, man, I can admit when I'm wrong. This one makes me different than almost everybody in the entire world.
So, yeah, and then the other thing was Ronnie Bell. Like, they just seem to really want to run the ball with him.
Well, he's the new Bell.
The Calvin
he's
Bell.
The new
he's
Bell.
He's the Calvin
good,
Bell.
Good cut.
You got a guy named Bell, you got to give him the reverses and end around. So that's just the way it works.
Okay.
We haven't had a guy named Bell since. I guess you don't know the
I remember Calvin Bell.
The bylaws.
Oh, but I don't remember.
Yeah, you weren't at that ceremony.
No.
Where Lloyd Carr decreed that all Bells get the end arounds and reverses.
Runs the curves.
To me, I feel like those should be Chris Evans plays. Because Ronnie Bell's fine and all that stuff.
Sure.
Chris Evans can be a slot guy. And we've seen him in space, and he is really elite in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a great way to get him the ball, especially when you have other guys you could run.
Like, but he's not named Bell.
Well, we can work on that.
Is that...
I mean, can't you change your name?
Well, I mean...
Chris Bell. There. Chris Bell Evans. Does that work?
Crystal Bell?
What?
I think we're end of the receivers discussion here.
Well, I think we're at the end of the offense discussion. When
is there anything that you can
I mean,
talk about the O-line that you noticed that jumped
out? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Like
Ruiz missed the pull.
Ruiz missed a block on one of those.
On the Bell run.
On the Bell run. Which
the Bell curve.
I mean, that'll happen. No. No.
That's the second time I did it. He didn't get it the first time.
Listen to me now.
Ryan misses the math joke.
Oh, man.
No.
See, your
I feel like you're not listening.
Your mouth is saying no, but your eyes
oh
are saying
my
yes.
God. That is not an acceptable. This like.
I think we're gonna take a break.
Yeah,
and maybe come back and talk about the defense.
Sure.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Dum,
if you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-8255. 9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Feels so good. Sutekina afternoon.
Well, now that we've had the most Me Too segment of our podcast history, let's talk about the defense. You're a bad man. You think you're good.
Samuel L. Jackson called me that once.
Really?
No.
No.
But it's cool that I could kind of swing you on it.
You know who else is a bad man is Pacheco.
He's fine. So he has this 80-yard run.
Seth is just really excited that he scouted Rutgers, picked up on something, and now he really wants to talk about it.
Yeah. So
I'm the only person in the world who scouted Rutgers. I don't even think Michigan bothered to scout Rutgers.
No.
Somebody actually went and watched these games, and now I have takes.
No. We are not gonna enable or encourage this behavior.
And you sound like me.
Watching Rutgers on purpose more than once a year leads to brain damage.
Okay.
More brain damage. Anyway, so the 80-yarder, I think blame can be split up between four different people.
Who was that? Who had the run?
I don't remember. But Chase Winovich,
yes.
Went out real hard for the end around fake. So did Tyree Cannell. One of those guys is in error.
Yeah.
And then I think Cannell was especially in error because Winovich is already chasing back to the ball carrier. And Cannell takes two or three hard steps more to the outside before redirecting. And that's the path through the secondary to Hawkins. Hawkins should probably be able to get there and shut that down. And this random Rutgers running back who's like a freshman outrunning him to the end zone, a little bit disturbing. And then the other guy is Devin Gill. Because Gill just buries himself in the front side of this play, which is a reaction you expect from a linebacker on a worse defense. So Michigan's front side probably has this fine. And you need to, you know, check your six before you decide that you're going to go gung-ho after this ball. He doesn't. He gets wiped out. And that's why there's such a big, immediate upfield path. So those four guys combined, possibly one of Winovich or Cannell is innocent. If I had to guess, I would say Cannell because,
someone at the line has to have backside contain.
If Winovich is moving out in a more responsible manner towards that end around, he's able to recover and tackle or at least slow the back, and then it's a 10-yard play. Because he went so gung-ho upfield, he can't recover at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is the end around and he's kind of hedging his bets, like maybe that guy gets outside for 10 or 12 yards, but it's not going to be directly up the gut threatening a touchdown.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a callback to his earlier wild man days.
2016.
As a youth.
Chase Winovich.
Where he was just all over the place. And that's not something we've really seen from him this year. So it's probably just a one-off. It is a coaching point that they can work on. I don't think it's going to be
a reality check. All right. Now he's got you can get him mad about something for next
week.
This
is like the first time that Michigan has had a big bust, I think, since the SMU game.
Yeah, so, I don't remember one.
So there was the Hawkins / Long bust.
Oh, yeah. That was in the secondary. And that was only Hawkins, second or third game?
Yeah. So, but I can't remember one since that.
Oh, really? Definitely not for a touchdown. They might have been one for like 20 yards, but
well, there was Brandon Watson falling over against Penn State, but that's not a bust, right? That's just a thing that happens every once in a while.
Yeah.
So, that's the 80-yarder, and then they had a couple other kind of chunk runs, and the first chunk run is a crack sweep, which is a little bit galling.
Yeah.
To get crack swept, I guess.
Swept. I think
crack swept.
Crack swept.
And that. You have Hawkins in there, and he turns into the edge guy, and he does not crack replace at all. And that's most of that run. So Hawkins coming in for Metellus hurt Michigan, I think, in a couple of ways in this game, and that was why Rutgers got to score and had a little bit of a semblance of offense. So young player, a guy who might be the starter next year, might not be. Depends on a lot of other factors. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, the long run was I was fine with, mostly because afterwards all the stats were so great to talk about. Like, oh, this is a longer run than Michigan normally gives up in an entire game. And, like, considering the gauntlet we just went through, they're naming off Michigan State got this many yards, Penn State got this many yards, and, like, Rutgers got more than that in one run. It was worth it just for the trolling alone. I thought that the play itself was just zipper action, which Rutgers hadn't shown all year, so Michigan was overreacting to the side, and the safeties didn't rotate like they should have.
Did you see Gill much after?
He got in a couple times. Like, there were a couple plays where I was like, I don't know about that.
Because we saw Ross make a couple nice plays.
I mean, he had a stick on a pass breakup that was like, ooh, he's done that a couple times.
Yeah, he had the one on like the crossing route earlier.
Yeah,
he also flagged down the tight end in a lot of space for like a 0-yard gain, which I thought was an impressive like space backer play.
Like, he's been getting about 2/3 of the weak side linebacker snaps this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's clearly in the lead. I think we've gotten enough evidence that he's the better player.
Yeah.
And I mean, they don't need to stop rotating Gill in, because, like, what's going to happen? Like, your defense is still going to be number one in the country, but...
Yep.
I kind of, for the Ohio State game, I kind of want...
A little more Ross.
I think Ross has deserved those snaps.
Yeah.
So, it keeps going on, the blood war.
I think the other takeaway is just the people that Moore didn't play, and sort of some of the precautionary...
Right, so Metellus doesn't play.
Right.
Solomon doesn't play.
Right.
Hill and Pay kind of walk to the locker room.
Yeah, and I didn't see the hits or anything, so I don't know how serious
Pay
they
was
were,
more concerning, because like he was holding his
Pay
arm.
Had like a, it looked like a stinger or something.
Yeah.
It could have been a pinched nerve or something too.
Yeah, but that's, so he had an arm thing, so usually not too bad. And then after the game, Harbaugh said that it was a concussion protocol thing for Hill. So that's probably just precautionary.
Right. And I think that my takeaway from all of that was, if there's anything negative that happened at all with anyone that is going to fit into a game plan in the future, you're just like, nope.
Right.
Just put them in bubble wrap and get them out of here.
And even in this context, Rashawn Gary plays most of this game.
Right. I was about to say, except for apparently Rashawn Gary.
Well, half the people in the stands were his friends and family, so it's kind of hard to take him out, because then everybody leaves.
And then they had the great video in the press conference.
Right, where he's
just
like
doing every possible move right. with his arm and shoulder, and then...
He also had that play where he was laying on the ground for a while, and everyone's like, oh no, oh no. And then he like jumps up by doing like a push-up. Gary's fine, everybody. Gary's fine.
Okay. Revenge Tour 2019. It's going to be tough. to manufacture revenge reasons for many of these teams. Rutgers is not one of those teams, but because they kept throwing screens on 3rd and 11, thus murdering Michigan's number one in the country by a country mile passing down sack rate. That's not trying to win the football game, Rutgers. That's just trying to screw with Michigan's S&P page. I feel directly trolled by these tools. Let's get it. We're going to crush them next year.
We're going to just ruin
Rob.
Yeah, that's the 2019 also, Rutgers mantra. Do it for the bloggers.
Why are you throwing screens at Devin Bush and Khalik Hudson?
And Brandon Watson. I mean, the first one was open.
Uh-huh.
And then they ran the
same play, the very next play.
And then
let's run it again.
They did drop a couple that it looked like maybe there was a few yards, but then Devin Bush later on had a great punch out. I thought
there was a conversion on a flare,
dropped a ball, and he came around and used his fist, knocked the ball right out.
Yeah, that's a PBU, baby.
That's how you play it.
They also had a pass to Rashigno.
I was saving that.
Oh, I'm
Boo,
sorry.
Seth.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's the sad quarterback throwback?
That's the sad trick play.
The sad trick play.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, David. Spoiler I didn't mean alert. To.
No, that's good. I was sick of waiting for him to spring it.
Brian doesn't have the patience.
I mean, I didn't think that was it because there were so many other sad things in this game at the end of it.
No, that's a good one.
That's a legit one because you have...
Your sad trick play.
You're down multiple scores, and then it gets you like 19 yards.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what a trick play isn't designed to get you 19 yards. It's designed to, like, flip the field or get you a touchdown or put you in scoring range, and they just converted a first down.
They should have saved that for the situation trophy game.
Jeez.
Like, ha-ha, we can throw to our quarterback, too.
Ambry Thomas had a nice interception at the end of the game.
He did, and I thought his coverage was good on that, and that's, like... I small sample size, obviously, but I mean, we're theorizing that a couple of our corners won't be here next year, and I mean, Thomas is going to be the leader, not even in the clubhouse. He's got to be almost pronounced starter.
Yeah,
and we just haven't seen a lot of him in coverage. He's gotten a couple like PIs late and stuff like that, but like
junkie PIs, I think, like junkie PIs. Like.
Well, okay, but the point is like you just haven't seen a lot of reps of him in live game. And, I mean, he was on him there, got inside, and picked the ball off. And that's like, okay, this is what we're used to seeing since, like, what, 2015, 2014. Yeah. So, all right.
And Devin Bush got a roughing the passer call.
People were in my mentions afterwards saying, like, cause it's because he drove him into the field, which, one, that is not a college rule. It's an NFL rule.
Yeah.
And, two, it's a stupid NFL rule you should not be talking about on Twitter. He actually affected the pass. Like the pass floated a little bit because he'd actually gotten to he touched the quarterback's hand before it got thrown.
Yeah, that I don't understand.
That was a sad reffing.
It was just a penalty for hitting the guy too hard. That's what it was. Like Bush was really fast and that looked bad. And that's why they threw it, because he hit the guy really hard.
And maybe the score had something to do with it.
I don't know. I don't think so.
If you're taking pity on Sitkowski, why are you making him stand behind those guys three more times?
At one point, he had, I think he was 3 of 8 or 9, and 2 of his receptions were to Blackshear, and Blackshear had 2 catches for 0 yards.
Yep.
This was a passing Rutger, wasn't it?
Rutgers had... yes. No, because of the sad pass.
Because of the sad quarterback pass.
Now it's officially. It is officially a sad trick play. And I have you on board.
That's how they escaped the
pass. Yeah, because it was because Sitkowski was 8 of 19 for 40 yards. So it would have been, except for Pacheco was 1 of 1 for 19.
Come on.
Also, Sitkowski was 8 of 19 for 2.1 an attempt.
I mean, that's kind of what he does, though.
Yeah, and only one interception, though, so that's pretty good.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and desperately try to come up with something to talk about in the next segment.
There will be a Rutger.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go: Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESHORELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Woody's now known by the sorrel and the roan, by the chestnut and the bay and the gelding gray. Let us stay by the gate that you are given and remain in your place for your season. And had the overfit it, but listen to the high fence horse and squeeze down. Did you hear that bear said monkey will get out of here fair and square? They left the gate open wide. So, my bride.
Do you know what we should talk about? It's hummus.
We do that quite frequently on this show.
And people enjoy it when we do.
They do. It's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, they like to be reminded that the hummus that they consume is not made of cats.
It does give you a certain air of superiority walking down the street, knowing that the hummus you consume is not made of kittens, unlike most of the people who walk down the street.
Do you look at the people when you're walking down the street and say, like, I bet that person's been eating kittens in their hummus?
I do.
Yeah, well, some people are now getting on the internet and talking about their favorite flavors for Lantana. So
really?
Spoon University was the...
They have like their top five.
Yep. Do you have
a gimmicky top five of Lantana hummus?
It's a big thing, man. This is the second largest selling hummus in the country.
Nice.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if you could guess which ones were the top ones.
Well, I'm looking at it right now, so I can.
That ruined that segment.
The black bean is number one. That's a pretty good one.
That is a pretty good one. I'm not surprised that one's up there because it's like a pretty good dip for any event.
Sure.
And number two is my carrot one, which...
Your carrot one,
was
yeah.
One. Number good. Three was kind of an upset, though, the cucumber.
That's a good one. It's got like dill stuff in it, and it's...
It is pretty... You have to like dill.
It's edamame, though. I mean, I do like dill. People think I'm Russian because of that.
Yeah.
And that's... Everybody who has got a weird thing, like, there's a Lantana hummus for you. Maybe they'll make a bay leaf hummus that's like, oh, that's what a bay leaf tastes like, because nobody knows.
Now, apparently, you're the only person who doesn't taste bay leaves.
I'm... No, nobody. There's a whole thing about how there's a bay leaf conspiracy, and Lantana hummus might resolve it by making a bay leaf hummus. Until then,
try the cucumber,
and enjoy your Lantana hummus at Bush's, Meijer, Kroger, or your local grocer. Look for the striped lids. All right, this is when we usually talk about special teams and game theory and miscellaneous game things. We've already covered the sad trick play.
Darn you, Seth.
There were a couple of special teams things in this game. Kalik Hudson almost blocked another punt.
Oh my gosh. That just defies physics almost.
That happened to him last year, I think. Like, I think he overran a punt last year.
Yeah, I remember you said that. Yeah, but this isn't overrunning. This was, he was in the right position, yeah. And the guy, like, kicked a, I don't even know, like a frozen rope that he somehow bounced on the middle of the ball. So it didn't even, like, hit the ends. It just kind of spun on, like, the fattest part of the ball and bounced and rolled down the field. Like, you can't.
You seem really upset about
this.
How
does that happen?
It's like a 34-yard punt, and you just keep bringing this up.
I've done it once.
There was a rant in our prep session that you were like, I can't believe this punter. What is going on?
That's a really good impression of me, by the way.
I know.
Surreal.
I thought you were David there for a second.
Thank you.
Well, the world would have been a better place.
Dave, you're getting a little big for those britches.
My britches. Well, I guess I did grow up in Georgia, so I guess you can call them britches.
All right.
Anyway, so yeah, but like it was one of the weirdest punts I've seen. Like, it just shoots under a guy. Poor Kalik Hudson should have two extra punt blocks on his resume.
Yeah.
Has neither. Actually, I think they did call it a punt block and then took it away.
Well, because it wasn't. I mean, like.
Well, right, but it looked like it. That's the insinuation of, like, when you see the result of that punt, you're like, oh, he got it. That was the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's disappointing because that would have been like a. Like, if he gets those two punts, he's probably up to like five or six in his career.
He's got a lot.
I don't even know if Michigan has a record book for this, but that would probably be number one.
They do, and I think it was Walker.
What, do you have, like three or four?
I think he has four in his career.
Yeah.
And there was another receiver who was another great receiver in the 90s who was up there. So there's your. I mean, the records are all like since the 60s.
Sure.
But
who knows before that?
They didn't even punt before that, probably.
Are you kidding? That's all
been,
he did.
That would have been
That's
your
the
favorite.
Joke. That's a joke.
Oh, thank you, Brian. You explained the joke for me.
Hart had a kind of a not a great pooch punt where they punted from, was it opposing territory or was it?
Yeah, it was fourth and three at the end of the half. And, you know, I think at that point Michigan's up 21-7.
Yeah.
And, like, the worst possible thing that could happen is going into the half 21-14, so whatever. And he's not a poocher.
Yeah. But it, I mean, it barely rolled inside the 20. I think got to like the 17. He had. My point is, like, he had a few more yards to play with.
All right.
Yeah, I think the fourth down decision making was fine throughout this entire game.
No, it was good. You don't always get those decisions. If I was Harbaugh, I'm going for it on fourth and three because what is Rutgers going to do with 50 seconds on the clock? Right.
Yeah.
I thought their offense was so bad that you are probably supposed to go there, but.
And they went, what, two, three, four other times?
Yes.
Like, so they've – I like seeing that because that's something that Michigan can do, when, not only when you're a better team, but when you have certain things that you can execute on offense that can keep your drives moving. It changes the play calls on third downs when you know you're going to do that.
And then the kickoffs kept landing at, like, the 15. And I that seemed on purpose because it was so consistent.
Yeah.
But maybe it was a wind thing.
That could be.
I think, well, Moody kept on pooching them up there for them to bring out. And, like, they were supposed to be fair caught, and Rutgers was taking them out anyway. So Michigan just pooching them.
When you catch them at the 15, then I think your upside on a return is pretty good.
Like, you just got to get 11 yards.
But they were, no, he was skying those, and they were coming down at the 15. So he was sticking them up there. Because if you sky it and put it on the 5, he's just going to fair catch it and get on the 25. If you sky it and put it on the 15, you can get the guy down on the 20. And that's what they did a couple times.
They also gave up two big returns.
Right. Is that a little concerning? I know there were penalties on both of them, but still.
I'd say so.
The one was seemingly away from the returner completely.
Well, the other thing is, like, this is the Rutgers game. And if there's an opportunity to not have a kickoff return happen, that's what I'm doing.
Yep.
Like, I just don't want Ben Mason to get cut.
Yep. Why have more plays where people are in jeopardy?
Yeah.
When the game is not in doubt after lit in the second quarter.
No. I agree with you in principle, but I do love, you know, the whole coaches versus the kickoff rules thing.
Speaking of, Wisconsin kicked it to the Penn State up back.
They did, to 69.
They kicked it to 69.
Which I did not see.
And he fumbled. He picked up the ball and he started trundling with it, and then he fumbled it. And I think Penn State got it back, but it was a good idea.
Yeah.
All so right. Don't put an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. Don't put a Heisman candidate as your upback.
He's a particularly large person.
He's a big
for lineman too.
Also,
yeah.
Ambry Thomas is just really fast. Like, he ran down both those kickoffs, the returns. I mean, you could see him gaining.
People say he's the fastest guy on the team.
I believe it.
And there's a lot of fast guys on the team.
Yeah. That's impressive.
So there was a band, Rutger.
What's a band, Rutger?
Band, Rutger is when the band outnumbers your student section.
So like every Michigan State game, putting ksh.
There you are. But yeah, it was...
Did you see the attendance for that game?
I didn't see the attendance.
They're playing Ohio State. And it's like a 3.5-point spread.
They're all for Ohio State anyway. There's a guy I work with who said, and he played for the team, and he said, if we lose to Ohio State this week, it's not that big a deal because it keeps you guys out of, like, making sure that you're in the Big Ten.
Seriously?
Yeah. And I told him, I was like, that's peak Sparty.
That is the
and
littlest brother
thing.
I don't
talk a lot of trash, especially to people in person and stuff, and I just, you know, right. I'm just going to try to be...
Except me. On the podcast that's being recorded.
You've told me to do such things.
I never.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I could like to believe you, but your nose is actually growing. See, that was a movie reference to Pinocchio.
That's see,
thank you,
also,
David. Now I
also,
got the joke.
It was also a Friends reference for you, Seth. Anyway, so I said to him, I was like, all right, I just kind of lost it at that point because I was like, okay, that's peak Sparty, man.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and goes, yeah, agreed. And I was like, I'm going to go back to my desk now.
Right. I think it's fine as a silver lining. Because, like, my Spartans friends that I knew were all like, no, we want to beat Ohio State.
Right.
But, like, once they're getting down and, like, they've had their four sad timeouts, like, they're, yeah.
I mean,
at that point, it's just like, okay, at least blah, blah. At least Northwestern is
so
punching their ticket before Michigan.
I mean, that's kind of what I felt watching the Michigan State-Ohio State game, where I was like, all right, I want Michigan State to win this. But then the silver lining when Michigan State went full Sparty no was like, this is really funny.
Right. And that's...
Well, we should talk about this with Jamie, shouldn't we?
Yeah, but the point is just like, you root for your team, man.
Right. You
above
root
all.
For what's good for your team.
Right.
I want to say I am mad on behalf of... Because, you know, I do the ticket watch, and I was watching the Rutgers tickets all year because so many Michigan fans wanted to go to that. And Rutgers fans
okay.
were on their board saying, don't sell your tickets, just don't go. And there were so many empty seats in that stadium when the tickets stayed high right up until the very end, even though there like no one was going to that game. Because
was the hot tub empty?
I didn't even look at the hot tub. We should have
made Patrick.
Ticket watch is not covered
the hot tub. Yeah, he could go, but he had to take some shot. He had to spend a quarter in the hot tub.
Were we the only people who sent a photographer to Rutgers? He had this picture up where it's like, hey, nobody else is here. Surely like M Live sent someone, right? Like the news.
Get the beautiful shot of the cannon shooting the empty student section.
They did get to fire their cannon.
We go above and beyond by sending people to Rutgers. He volunteered. I don't want any OSHA complaints. He's like, I could go to Rutgers. And I was like,
I figured right. that he just like screwed up like a week or two ago. And you're like, you're going to Rutgers.
No, he wanted to go. He has buddies out in New Jersey. Apparently.
We should have sent him to the hot tub.
Like into the hot tub?
At least in the area.
Okay. He's got equipment. Yeah. All right. We're obviously wandering. Let's talk to Jamie.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
We welcome in Jamie Macker of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm just going to take a break from running my Isaiah Pacheco for Heisman campaign and talk a little Big Ten football with you guys.
Oh, man. You have just made Brian's day.
All right. Northwestern 14, Iowa 10. Northwestern, with a couple of other results in the Big Ten West that we'll get to, locks up the West Championship by gaining 306 yards of offense.
Oof. Well, that was like an explosion compared to Iowa.
Well, Iowa slightly outgained them, but it was just kind of one of those like Big Ten clunkers. Like someone tweeted out that these games are very on brand because Northwestern Iowa was 0-0 deep into the second quarter, and
yeah.
Bedlam was like 28-27 at the same time.
Yeah, guess what I was watching?
Northwestern Iowa?
No.
Oh, you are not dedicated to our podcast.
Provide you with the stats, Brian.
Mm.
Yeah, since yesterday was a Michigan road game, I kind of had my little TV room set up, and obviously that was running the same time as the Michigan game, so that was on my main TV, but I had Bedlam and I had Iowa Northwestern on side-by-side smaller TVs, and it was just like a brutal exercise in compare and contrast. I mean, it didn't even look like the same type of football was being played.
Well, Isaiah Bowser does go for 165 yards. They seem to have found a little bit of something on the ground. They were one of the worst rushing offenses in the country, even with Jeremy Larkin. And this is like, you know, 3 weeks in a row that Bowser has actually, you know, been reasonably efficient on the ground.
Yeah. And he's actually finally taken over from Larkin, the team lead in rushing. And Larkin hasn't played since the middle of September. Not just a bad rushing team, but they at times didn't even care to rush the football. In their first six games, they were at a run-pass ratio play calling at 36%. Run 64 pass, but that's rebounded the last 4 weeks. They've gone 55% run to 45% pass. And yesterday, 46 runs. Go back to that Nebraska game a month ago where they flat out not just gave up running the football on first down, but gave up running it altogether against a porous run defense. Since then, though, they've been pretty solid. Bowser had 17 rushes yesterday on first down, and 12 of them went for at least 4 yards. You know, and so, you know, not awesome, but, you know, that kind of helps put that passing attack in kind of like second and makeable, third and makeable. And I thought the other thing that was interesting was three times yesterday in the second half, they ran for a first down on a passing down. And then another time, a fourth time, they ran it on a third down, passing down, and got close enough and went for a short fourth down conversion, which Bowser got. So they've kind of flip the script on, you know, their offensive profile a little bit as far as what they want to do and how they want to do it. And at first it looked like, well, just Rutgers, you know, but, you know, he ran the ball pretty well against Wisconsin. Bowser had some nice plays last week against Notre Dame. And yesterday he actually just, he carried him. He flat out carried him.
Yeah, Thorson has 4.1 yards an attempt. And they score the winning touchdown because Bennett Skowronek, like, digs one out for 30 yards. That's like a quarter of his passing yards on the day.
Yeah.
So Thorson was having this kind of mid-season renaissance where he's, like, lighting up Michigan State, kind of looking like, oh, he might be an NFL quarterback after all, and now it's kind of back to the salt mines. And this is an Iowa team that last week against Purdue, their freshman cornerbacks got absolutely shredded coming into this game against Northwestern, and Northwestern can't do anything in the air.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks very average. I mean, maybe the knee injury is still playing with him mentally, but he plays like a freshman sometimes out there. He just locks on to guys, and that's what was happening yesterday. I mean, these Iowa cornerbacks and Iowa defensive backs that were just destroyed a week ago were just seeing his first read and reading his eyes and making pass breakups. Nobody was open.
Was Nagel out? I don't see him on the receiving chart.
He just wasn't a factor. He had a nice punt return in the second half, but they just couldn't get him the ball.
Wow, not even a catch.
Frankly, after the Skowronek game-winning touchdown, their other three best pass plays were first down conversions, short pitch and catch and runs with Bowser. He had 33 yards receiving.
Meanwhile, I was up 10-7 in this game. Despite the fact that they can't run the ball at all, they have a couple of fumbles in the fourth quarter. One of them, the Gaz, punching the ball out.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Northwestern does have a pretty frosty front seven, so I'm not entirely surprised that Iowa couldn't really move the ball on the ground. But they're not playing Noah Fant at critical parts of the game. And, like, people are, is he hurt, or is it just, like, have you lost your damn mind?
Hawkinson's had nice numbers, though.
And they used to, like, put both guys out there and be like, all right, these guys are our receivers, and they are better than their actual receivers. So what is Noah Fant doing on the sideline?
Yeah, I mean, they ran a lot of their 11 package yesterday with just one tight end, which seems kind of a foolish thing to do since, you know, your two tight ends are both so dominant. But they're making the choice that Hawkinson is out there in that package ahead of Fant. Yesterday, Stanley had 41 passing attempts and only three targets to Noah Fant. And he only had 9 total second half snaps yesterday.
And he's a first round pick, right?
He's adamant that he's healthy. And one thing that's been kind of going on, you know, in recent weeks during the season here is his brother, who's a coach in Omaha, has been like subtweeting the coaches. I mean, I remember saying a few weeks ago that, like, wow, if Fant comes back next year, they could have something big. But I don't see any way he comes back to Iowa City. It kind of looks like a divorce right now.
That's very strange.
Yeah.
All right, Minnesota 41, Purdue 10 in just the what the hell just happened game of the week. Purdue's held to 233 yards a week after getting absolutely destroyed. I mean, Minnesota got absolutely destroyed last week. They gave up like 350 rushing yards to Nebraska. Illinois.
55 points last week.
55 points to Illinois last week. They fired their defensive coordinator, and that looks like a good call.
Right. I should have done that earlier, PJ. Yeah. Over 10 yards per play they gave up against Illinois a week ago. So here you've got a team that's been giving up 7.38 yards per play in conference games, going up against Purdue, 6.9 yards per play on offense. That not only leads to Big Ten, that's 10th nationally. So, of course, yesterday they got held to just 3.8 yards per play, 233 yards below their season average. None of Purdue's first 9 drives went for more than 18 yards yesterday. By the time they were able to sustain something longer than that, it was late in the third quarter, and they were down 34-7 at that point.
There must have been some hijinks in this game because, like, Minnesota didn't exactly light it up themselves, like a turnover or a punt return.
It was a bad weather game. It was snowing most of the game. It didn't get any accumulation, but there was definite snow throughout the game. I think the funky business was somehow Clayton Thorson having an identical twin that took David Blau's place, because Blau was like 16 for 20 in the first half, but didn't even have 100 yards passing.
Oh my God.
In the first half.
What?
Yeah. And then so you're thinking, okay, they're just down 13-3. They're going to get this on, you know, and then they try to run a zone read with Blau on third down on the first possession of the third quarter, and he just runs it really clumsily. The Minnesota guy holds him up, and the second guy easily strips him of the ball, return for a touchdown. 20-3, and it just seemed like Purdue gave up at that point.
He's already taken the Louisville job.
Yeah, that's definitely true, which, by the way, I don't know if you guys caught the news while you were recording the Michigan part. Louisville finally did pull the trigger on Petrino. So, yeah, maybe his mind was already at Churchill Downs yesterday, Jeff Brom were talking about.
Or maybe it is the fate of Purdue and Indiana to play for the old Oaken Bucket and a bowl bid.
Yeah, that's about as good as we can get for a bucket game, right?
And Indiana has placed themselves in this position with a 34-32 victory over Maryland. And Maryland has one of their, oh, we have an offense games. They rack up 550 yards of offense. Indiana doesn't crack 400, but they managed to squeak it out for reasons that Jamie will now elucidate to me because I didn't watch any of this game.
Right, right. Well, first I want to point out that Maryland's quarter scores yesterday read 6-9-8-9. I just wanted to throw that out. Hey Maryland, shoes on the other foot. Usually it's Indiana that racks up a lot of yards, that kind of goes toe to toe with the team, but they screw up all their scoring chances, you know, and instead of being in a dead even game, they're down like 24-9 and they're chasing. Well, that was Maryland yesterday. They outgained Indiana 159-12 in the first quarter and ran 26 plays during the first quarter, but they only had a 6-0 lead. So then when Indiana hits a couple big plays, they take a 7-6 lead, and then when Maryland rediscovers its derpness and turns it over twice and Indiana cashes those in, all of a sudden, you know, in the span of like 10 real minutes, you've gone from thinking you've been dominating this whole game, and you're down, all of a sudden you're down 21-6, and Maryland chased that the whole game. They finally caught Indiana, but then Indiana kicked a game-winning field goal to win the game, which was set up by a big Stevie Scott run.
Yeah, Stevie Scott goes over 100 yards on just 19 carries.
Yeah.
Is that the freshman record for rushing touchdowns, perhaps, at Indiana? I saw a tweet, but because someone was like,
that could be. He's definitely been finding pay dirt. I apologize. I missed that form of trivia. But after a rough patch there in the middle of the year, he's gone 138, 96, 103 the last 3 weeks with 5.3 yards per carry.
So he's rediscovered his Rutgers decommit form.
Right. He totally has. And joking aside, though, that's kind of what you like to see out of a freshman. He kind of hits the wall, but then he had a second win. So that's kind of nice. That's kind of nice to see.
Did Kasim Hill get hurt? Or because Piggy has 13 attempts in this game for 11 yards an attempt. And,
yeah.
Like, did they make that move voluntarily?
They just took Hill out just from ineffectiveness. And Piggy's passing, there we go, I like that alliteration, really pushed, oh, another one, pushed their comeback in the second half, really caught Indiana off guard. Boy, Kasim Hill, I mean, we were all really high on him coming out of high school, and this has been a brutal first full year on the field for him, hasn't it?
Seth is telling me that he did apparently have an injury to his knee, but you could have missed that and assumed that they just put in Piggy because they thought he'd be the better quarterback.
Yeah, looking at his stats, that's what I thought.
He's like a 50% passer on the year Hill is, and he's not the runner that Piggy is. So I kind of feel like if you're going to have this offense, like I'm rolling with Piggy.
Yeah.
The mononymed one.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, they've got enough, you know, home run threats in the running attack that if you could just provide some level of passing, and it's not like Piggy's like a fifth-year senior. You've got a future with him.
Yeah.
If you decide to go with him, and
well, he's,
you
know, also,
he's been through. Oh,
like,
go ahead.
He's more of a runner. Like he's a guy who is a real threat on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like Michigan learned that themselves against their second string, but still. Like,
but he's able to use that threat and at least connect on some passes.
Right. Yeah.
Too. I mean, you know, 10-13. Do what you will. He was 10-13. I mean, that's like, that's Joe Montana for a Maryland quarterback lately.
Oh man, Big Ten. All right, on to
I should
the...
have said Boomer Esiason, that's a Maryland quarterback. I should have said Boomer Esiason.
There we go.
Oh, well.
On to the headliner / horror show of the week, Ohio State 26, Michigan State 6. The Ohio State punter, Drew Chrisman, is the player of the game by continually pinning Michigan inside their 10, usually inside their 5.
Michigan State.
Michigan State, thank you. And it's just kind of a mud fest. Like, it's 6-7 when Mark D'Antonio decides on an intentional safety
in the third quarter,
and then the kicker puts it out of bounds, so they get it at midfield anyway. Just lost his mind, And, you know, they're switching between Lewerke and Rocky Lombardi. And Lewerke has an excuse for missing all his passes, and Rocky Lombardi does not. But, you know, they're in this game until right at the end, where the fact that their offense is just a complete horror show catches up to them. Yeah. You know, Ohio State's side of the ball, 5.8 yards an attempt for Haskins on 39 attempts. Doesn't sound that great. Can't get to 350 yards against Michigan State. Like, I watch this game and I'm like, these are two bad teams, and Michigan should beat Ohio State. And then I get terrified of that thought.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I was right there with you, feeling the same thing. You know, there's always debate when MSU and Ohio State play, like, hey, who should we cheer for? And there was obviously a legitimate reason yesterday why we were cheering for Michigan State. But wasn't that just, like, the best outcome? Like, just dirt on both sides of the football.
Yeah.
Watching it play out. I thought, it was going to go 0-0 at halftime there for the longest time. But then there was just, everything was silly. Like, in the first half, like, every pass the Lewerke threw was, like, in the stands or deflected. You know, Ohio State was getting crushed. Wilkes dominated the first half, and he made plays against each tackle, you know, in the first half. So, like, I'm just salivating there, you know, watching it play out. There was a 4-yard punt. Let's not lose sight of the fact that Drew Christensen's first punt yesterday went for 4 yards.
And he was still clearly the MVP of the game.
Right, exactly. His other 8 punts averaged over 43 yards an attempt, and 5 of them pinned him within the 6-yard line. Michigan State's second half drives started at the 5, 6, 3, 1, and 2.
That's yesterday. All of their second half drives.
That's amazing.
No, that's just their first. After the safety free kick exchange, they finally got it at the 25-yard line.
After a score.
And promptly lost 6 yards and had to punt it away.
Well, I mean, Ohio State scores 26 points in this game, and Michigan State hands them 10 pretty much directly. So there's the Devin Funchess Memorial Moon Game fumble in the end zone where it hits him as he's, like, running by the quarterback. And then you have the safety, and then you have another derpy fumble on a speed option that basically puts them in field goal range already. So, like, Ohio State scored maybe 13 points of their own in this game.
Didn't Michigan State have a touchdown called back, too?
Yeah, that was legit, though, because they had, like, a trick play that they wanted to throw, and then it was covered. So the guy bombed it downfield, but one of the linemen had already released. So it wasn't relevant to the play, but it was a legit call.
Fair.
So, I mean, the thing that kind of leapt out to me is that Michigan State, like, their quarterbacks couldn't hit the broad side of the barn, but those guys were open. Like, there were guys running open all day. And if State had someone, say, like Shea Patterson, who was a pretty accurate quarterback, they were going to be tearing up that secondary.
Yeah. Well, as bad as their offense looked as a team, Cody White still ended up catching 8 balls for 115 yards. You know, so that's, that was an indicator right there that if they had any better quarterbacking, who knows what might have happened. And just, it was so interesting yesterday. You know, remember earlier in the year when D'Antonio was talking about, oh, we're going to run the ball 40 times a game, that's our key to success. But yesterday, they threw it 40 times almost. They barely tried running the football. All that time they were pinned back there, deep in their own territory, they threw it 9 times yesterday when they were within their own 10-yard line. And the actual, it was going to be a 10th time, but they derped up that snap that they hit the guy in motion on. So, I mean, it just was so, like, he had way more, it seemed like he had way more confidence in his quarterbacks than the whole rest of the world knows he should. You know, I mean,
they really just cannot run the ball. Jefferson had 2 carries for 4 yards. Lewerke was 6 for 4. Hayward was 4 for 1. And Lombardi had 1 long run where he got 47 yards, so he was 3 for 49. But there's just, no one got double-digit rushing yards other than that 1 Lombardi run.
Yeah.
That is insane.
He had Lombardi, after that 47-yard run, he had a 12-yard run after that, so he had back-to-back running plays of 59 yards. Michigan State's other 16 running attempts netted -5 yards.
I mean, that includes fumbles, but still.
Yeah. Sacks.
Well, okay.
I mean, it's...
No, Ohio State did not sack them, but they do get dinged for negative yards on some of those turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those fumbles go down as, you know,
-6,
but still.
Dave is being very smug at me now. I just wanted you to know that. But, I mean, let's talk about Ohio State and what this game kind of portends for the game. Like, so Weber has 21 carries for 104 yards. Dobbins has 14 for 28. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of feels like likely to recur against a Michigan defense that's just as good as a run defense as Michigan State, at least in the ballpark. And then, you know, Haskins, like, he's really good at hitting stuff underneath, but if you can move him off his spot, he starts to lose his accuracy. And he doesn't really attempt many throws in the intermediate areas. It's all 10 yards and under, really. So, like,
yeah.
So, like, I wonder, they don't really like their pass protection, so they have this short passing game. They don't really like Haskins when he gets moved around, so they again have the short passing game. Mm-hmm. And if Michigan can just tackle people on the catch, they're going to be in third down, and they're terrible converting third downs this year. So I just feel so good about this game, and then I want to die.
Was Mack their downfield threat?
Not really. KJ Hill is, and he's very good, but you know, Mack was just kind of their third or fourth receiver. Hill's going to be it, but like, you know, I feel like they can match up against him man to man.
You'd think so.
Like, he's good, but I don't think he's out of this world good. He's not that big either, so like, he's not really a jump ball guy.
And they did they did bring in Martell, right? So they kind of put some of that on.
Yes, Martell. They brought in like the Martell short yardage red zone package, and that worked out fairly well. But they also had a fumble off of it, I think.
He only had one carry for 5 yards, so he must have been handing the ball off a lot.
Yeah, but the threat was there. But I think they fumbled in exchange.
Okay.
Like, or there was a false start. That's what there was. There was a false start that was partially because Martell was in the game. So there's going to be...
Well, yeah, that false start was interesting because, like, they were, you know, fourth and one, and we've talked all year about how they keep trying to run for it on fourth and short, and they've been getting stuffed all year. So I was really ready to see how that play was going to evolve, and then they get a false start there on the left side of the line, fourth and six, and they punt it. Now, actually, that led to the possession where Michigan State took the intentional safety. But, yeah, I kind of remember, like, sitting up in my chair wanting to see what was going to happen on that fourth and short when they put Martell in. But never happened.
No. Tay Martell seems a little young to have a full sleeve, right? Like, that takes time.
Right.
That seems like something that a 30-year-old man would have, not...
Got to do something during your redshirt year, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not implying anything about Ohio State. I'm just
surprised they never tried to get any package involved with him going earlier in the year, because, I mean, it just feels like this isn't a two-week development with this running attack. We've been talking about it all year, you know, and they just can't seem to generate, you know, anything out of their standard format. So
I just feel like they thought that they could get Haskins to do it.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain guys who – you know, don't really look like runners, but you can get them to be functional and efficient enough.
Yeah.
And Shea Patterson is kind of in that category, but he's faster than that. I'm thinking about most South Carolina quarterbacks.
Right.
Like, every South Carolina quarterback is this kind of gumpy white dude who still gets, like, 40 rushing yards
a
game.
That we keep playing in bowl games.
Yeah. And, like, or Lewerke. You know, Lewerke's not a guy who's super fast, but he can go get you some yards. And Haskins is just, he does not want to be touched.
You know, I can think of a couple times right here off the top of my head yesterday on third and short where they threw the ball. They threw it once on third and two, and I think Justin Lane got a pass breakup. And then later in the game, they threw it on third and three, and Raquan Williams pushed the center so far back off the snap that Haskins couldn't do his regular throw motion, and he just skied an open receiver right at the sticks.
Yeah. All right. Well.
And I think that's they have 3 weak spots on their offensive line, you know, right tackle, left guard, and center. And
that's 3 too many to play Michigan, hopefully.
I know, right? I mean, you know,
or if you're just Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a one-loss team right now, but they feel very rickety.
It's weird that Prince is still such a weak spot on that offensive line.
Well, he was like, pretty good last year, I thought.
He kind of did have a rebound year off of 2016.
I mean, like... He improved a lot. It's just kind of a strange thing to see him get absolutely whooped up on by a Minnesota outside linebacker. And then Willekes is one thing, because I think Willekes is probably a first-team All-Big Ten kind of player. But Michigan has one of those, too.
Oh, yeah. Willekes was great in this game. This was just, you know, more evidence that he's just not a little flash in the pan from last year. You know, he was just awesome. I mean, a few plays go another way, and I think we're talking about him as the MVP instead of Drew Chrisman.
More than a few plays.
Well, maybe. But, hey, you know, they're you know, it's 7-6 there. You know, just, you know. Were you guys as disappointed as I was that Ohio State scored that touchdown on that fumble in the end zone and that it wasn't recovered by MSU for a second safety?
I was definitely rooting for safety number two. Yeah.
This game needed a second safety.
Because then they would have had 11. Which would have been amazing. 11-6. What a score. All right, let's put this one in the dust. Penn State 22, Wisconsin 10. Jonathan Taylor rips off a 70-yard touchdown run on the third play from scrimmage. And that's all she wrote for the Wisconsin offense, because Jack Cohn averages 3 yards an attempt with two interceptions. And the thing that really jumped out to me about this game when I flipped over to it, because it was on at the same time as Ohio State, Michigan State, is that Wisconsin, with that first-round offensive line and all their incredible players, Penn State was taking it to them whenever they went into a pass drop.
Yeah.
Like last week, Michigan gave up basically no pressure. And in this game, Cohn was under siege. Like, he just had no time. He was making bad decisions. And Gross Matos and Shaka Toney and the third defensive end were just whipping up on these guys, which was weird to see, because I have a lot of respect for this offensive line. And for Michigan to badly outperform Wisconsin against the same team in pass protection 1 week apart is kind of an eye-opener.
I think you just said one team that just had no respect for the other team's quarterback and ability to throw the football. I mean, you know, Cohn is very Tanner McAvoy-ish out there, to compare him to another old Wisconsin quarterback. Remember him, the safety that they tried to play, you know, quarterback?
He's like a real quarterback, though. He's not
guiding every single throw he makes. And so I think they knew that they could just, you know, hang back, you know, with seven and just, you know, guard everybody and just let those guys up front go to town. They gave up 5 sacks, and they also had 4 pre-snap penalties yesterday, that offensive line. I just think that it's as great as that offensive line is, and as great as Taylor is, you know, the drop-off from Hornibrook to Cohn is so significant that they just don't have any chance at all in these games when he's playing.
Yeah, and so...
And Penn State knew it, and those guys teed off. And as long as he's rushing the quarterback, I think Gross Matos is a really good player. I know that you kind of dinged him up a little bit in the UFR last week, but I mean, I feel like as long as he's rushing the quarterback, he's not as much of a liability out there.
No, he's obviously
that review showed
a really good pass rusher, but you know, Taylor does have 185 yards on 20 carries in this game, so even with the 70-yarder out of the equation, he was very effective on the ground. It's just, you know, as soon as Wisconsin got in a 3rd and 5, their drive was over.
Right, exactly. Yeah, after that 71-yarder, though, early in the game, they only averaged 3.5 yards per play the rest of the game. And that 3.5 yards per play the rest of the game was mostly on Taylor and Taiwan Deal runs. It felt like Wisconsin, you know, for the first half, they only had 4 passing attempts. You know, and it felt like they were just trying to stay close enough in range and hope that Taylor and hope that Deal could hit some big plays. And that's how they got their 10 points. You know, their field goal was set up by like a 40-yard run by Deal to start the second half. But eventually, you know, as they started falling behind by 9 and 12 points, they had to throw the ball in the second half. And as you just pointed out, it was just a total disaster.
So Penn State has Rutgers and Maryland left, so they're very likely to finish 9-3.
Yeah.
And if things kind of shake out the way that it looks like they might be ranked 10th. They could be a top 10 win for Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
On the road. So that would be a nice feather in the cap when it comes down to the decision, if there is a decision to be made.
Right.
Finally, Nebraska 54, Illinois 35. Nebraska goes over 600 yards again. Illinois goes over 500 yards again.
Yeah.
And one of those is the more surprising statement. I mean, both these teams have dual threat quarterbacks now. What's the Bush's kid's first name for Illinois?
AJ
Bush runs for 187 yards. And this is like kind of, you know, I'm not too surprised by this, because Nebraska's defense has been just abominable all year. And, you know, when they've had Martinez at full go, he's been excellent. So this is, you know, they're going to carry over most of this offense next year. If they can just kind of tamp down this defense and get them to average, they're probably an 8-4, 9-3 kind of team next year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, they would have a little bit better luck, and they'd be kind of aiming for that right now. But 30 or more points now for 5 straight games for Nebraska. But what caught my eye going through some post-game notes, this was their 7th game in a row that they've had at least 450 yards of offense. They've never done that before in program history.
Really?
Yeah. They've done it 6 games in a row, including the 94 and 95 teams, which were really, really good, but they've never done 450 in a row 7 times. And I mean, you know, that's kind of an arbitrary number, but still, that is, you know, I mean, we've been sort of talking about how this offense has been coming on and coming on and coming on. They look pretty full functional. And it's not even the end of year one for Frost on that side of the ball.
No, and Martinez is throwing for 290 yards, 75% completion percentage, 8.5 yards an attempt. He's a freshman. Like, this offense is going to be locked in next year. And people are, I think they're going to be like the most underrated team in the country entering next year.
Yeah.
Illinois thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to just add one quick thing with Martinez.
Yeah.
You toss out the Michigan game, and he's averaging 342 yards in total offense against Power 5 opponents.
Yeah, he's a good find.
Yeah, he's definitely a good find. Illinois, that's the second time in 3 weeks they've had 500 yards and lost by double digits.
It's very Illinois. They also had 5 turnovers in this game. So,
this game was actually pretty exciting. I mean, 31-21, it looked like it was going to be the halftime score, and then a really bad muff on a punt gave Nebraska an easy touchdown before half. But this at the start, I was like, hey, this is going to be 2010 Michigan-Illinois for a while there. Then it didn't.
Is Bush
then it didn't materialize. But
coming back,
Nebraska played well the whole game. So
Bush has played 3 years, but he's been at 3 different schools.
Oh.
So it's tough to kind of tell. It looks like he maybe redshirted 15, sat out 16, played 17, but he was at Virginia Tech and Nebraska before.
Yeah.
So it's tough to comment on how many years of actual eligibility he has.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
they list him as a senior, but like I'm with Dave. Like when you break it down, you're sort of like, and there's like a junior college year in the middle of there too, I think.
That was probably 16. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely Vic Veramonte's role model. That's for sure.
That's true.
That's an obscure joke, but that's a Big Ten joke, kind of.
Well, Vic's actually coming back to the Big Ten. He's going to play linebacker for Nebraska next year.
Right, exactly. Hey, that's actually a more topical joke than I expected.
Yeah.
As like a grad transfer?
I think he's got two to play two.
Doesn't mean he doesn't have a degree from somewhere.
Well, he's at a JUCO now. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but like that's another reason that Nebraska's defense is going to take off. Vicious Vic.
So the other thing about Illinois is they host Iowa next week, and then they go to Northwestern. But if they win both of those, which... they've had the offense two of the last 3 weeks.
Nah.
They could make a bowl game.
Nah, that's not going to happen.
They have a better record than Nebraska.
That's true, but Nebraska has played much better this season.
I understand that. I was trying to have some positive note about Illinois.
All right.
Yeah. Can you imagine Northwestern entering the Big Ten championship game off a loss to Illinois?
Yes.
Yes, I can too. I can't too. We all get
what?
It's easy if we try, right? That's how the joke goes.
And they could just rest everybody.
They're not going to rest everybody.
They might not, but what I mean,
best people for the land of Lincoln rivalry. I mean, certainly
it's the hat game. Do you know?
Is that the official title, the hat game?
Well, it's they play for a hat. There's a rivalry trophy that's you don't read. Bring your champions. There are meat. Do you?
I don't even know what that is.
It's a Northwestern blog. It is the greatest blog in the universe.
Yeah, I read Sippin' on Purple and then it died.
Well, bring your champions. There are meat. How do you not know about this blog? I retweet like them incessantly. Him. Just one weird dude.
This one guy?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
I don't read a Lion Eye either, though.
Well, if you had read Bring Your Champions, there are...
I know what two blogs you're going to have to read next week leading up to the Northwestern game. That's your required reading, Dave. Seth had to watch Rutgers games this week.
I didn't ask him to do that.
Ohio State content for you Thanksgiving week.
I'm not asking anyone to watch.
Seth and Patrick both screwed up a couple weeks ago, and Brian was like, Seth, you have to watch Rutgers, and Patrick, you have to go. But he didn't make him go in the hot tub, so Patrick's like offense wasn't like a capital one.
We might be done with this segment, Jamie. Anything
Dave,
further?
You do have to brush up on your trophies, though. That's for sure.
Okay.
It's the hat game. You have anything you want to get off your chest before we hang up on you?
No, not at all. Not at all. Just I'm going to go back to my Isaiah Pacheco campaign. I've ripped up all my Jacob Fromm stuff. So,
all right.
Pacheco.
It was good talking to you, Jamie.
We're not Jacob Fromm. Proche, the Proche kid from SMU. I've thrown all my material at him. And
Proche.
Proche. It's all about Pacheco now.
All right, Jamie, it was good talking to you. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. This is David Nasternak along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. And with Bobby Petrino out and Jeff Brom potentially lured to Louisville, is the Karlaftis happening?
Erase all of this immediately.